Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930 WRVC present Tri-State Viewpoint. To join the program, call 304-399-8255 or toll free at 877-420-8255. Now, from the Kindred Capital Building in Huntington, Gene Dean and Bobby Nelson.
Hey, welcome to Monday's edition of Tri-State Talk. This is Bobby Nelson, Gene Dean, and we have, as usual, on Mondays when we can run him down, a very important person to the city of Huntington and to the nation at large, I think. No, anyway, locally. Gene, introduce our distinguished guest.
Well, if we could send our distinguished guest to Washington, I have a feeling that he, and working with Joe Manchin, would be able to, and before Bobby chokes, pick him up off the floor.
Send him up there to replace Joe Manchin, that's what
No. Well, as you may have guessed, listeners, our guest today is Huntington Mayor Steve Williams. Hello, Mayor.
Hi there. Good afternoon. Good to be here.
Thank you for inviting me back. Glad that you're here with us. There's a lot of little under-the-table jokes going on here, and we won't get into those. We'll get straight into some of the good news. And Bobby's still looking under the table. What'd you find, Bobby? A
couple pair of shoes.
There's nothing under the table in this room.
A couple of old worn-out shoes. One female and one male.
All right, some good news in the paper over the weekend. Well, I guess actually it was this morning that the story about the city sales tax far exceeding what we had anticipated, and what a good thing that is. So tell us about it, Steve.
That really has been pleasant. Is as long as we have been had the sales tax in effect, constantly we find that we're having to increase our revenue projections. Mm-hmm. And we really had projected that we were going to have a much lower collection this year because the food tax went away on July 1st.
Okay.
And we expected well over $1 million less in the sales tax revenues because of the loss of the food tax. Interestingly, in just this first quarter, we have we're running about $250,000 more than projections, and that comes to close to $1 million.
And just in this quarter, the first quarter of the budget,
the $250,000, yeah. And we project forward that it's nearly $1 million. Now, the one thing that I'm going to be pointing out to council as well as the general public, we were just having a meeting about this. Mm-hmm. Just because we have $1 million doesn't necessarily mean that let's all get in line and start spending it.
Right.
One big issue that is affecting us this fiscal year is our health care premiums. And without going into a lot of the weeds, we've had two or three fairly substantial claims. And we tried to rebid our health care insurance last spring so that we would be able to get a reduction. And through that, there were three individuals that were actually targeted, saying that we will reduce premiums, except your stop loss would go up to $500,000 on these three individuals. And one of them already has been, that $500,000 stop loss is already affected.
$500,000? But what is it we have that's the cap that, as I recall, was $75,000 per person?
Well, but typically, since we're self-insured, we will pay up to $100,000, and insurance will go beyond that, and that $100,000 comes out of our general fund revenues.
Mm-hmm.
This three individuals, we were told that the stop loss would be up to $500,000. And one of them already has reached that threshold.
And that $500,000 is in total. It's not just on an annual basis. It's in total for that person.
That's in total for that person, right, for this year. We have already spent.
You mean it could be that much again in another year?
It could be for this one. And we know what the circumstances are, and for obvious reasons, I'm not going to go into detail about that. Mm-hmm. But of the $900,000+ increase in our revenue, $600,000 of it is going to health care, principally because of that one case that we have. And that's part of the difficulty of being self-insured.
Oh, yes.
But the other areas are going into, as we have talked, Bobby, about the stormwater program.
Yes,
is going, the principal amount of the additional $300,000 is going towards the stormwater program.
Is that to to take care of any back payments or anything, or is that basically...
This is starting to build our stormwater program so that we start mapping where all of the storm drains are in the city, and start, in essence, preparing ourselves for what we're going to be announcing later this year, the complete program, the MS4 program, that will help us assure that we start reducing, if not eliminating, the flooding issues that we have in town.
Well, that's good news.
That's
every
huge
time
news.
It rains hard, we have a problem.
That's huge news. But I guess the long story short on the sales tax is that what we're starting to see is that in the levels that they are coming in, I believe that we're going to be positioned so that we will be able to begin paying for capital improvements on an ongoing basis as we need to in town.
Yeah. I know I heard what you said. I know I heard what I thought you said. And I want to be quite sure that I'm understanding this about the health insurance.
Yeah.
That one sick person, there's a stop loss at $500,000,
yes,
on that person and their treatment. However, that is $500,000, $500,000 annually.
Yes, yes.
Oh, dear.
But the nature of this one is... this one instance,
mm-hmm,
is really just an annual cost. It's not something that's going to be continued on.
I get what you're saying.
The nature of this claim, we know it's not going to go beyond this.
Right. If we could ever get out of the self-insured status, Bobby, and I think maybe you tried it. I know I tried it. But the cost of getting out of it is terrific.
That's what I was trying to do in the spring, to see if we would actually be able to move into that. And we're just not. The problem is that you have what they call a tail,
mm-hmm,
of ongoing claims,
right,
that you have to be able to pay for, and they were at such an extent that we still aren't in a position to do that,
mm-mm,
but we're taking steps in that direction.
Okay. On the Affordable Care Act, is there any way the city can qualify from some provisions of that, particularly as it comes to salaries of hourly employees?
Actually, we are looking into that. The one thing with the Affordable Care Act, as much as I think that it will prove to be beneficial to us all, there's so much uncertainty. And most organizations, businesses, as well as governmental, are trying to identify just how it is going to affect us. And the one thing that slows things down is uncertainty. And when I learned in business, if you're dealing with someone and they're not certain of what's going to be occurring in the future, they will just say, not now.
Yeah,
and we're not saying not now. We're saying let's find out what, get more information.
The law is there. The interpretation is there. It's just the implementation.
You know what's in there.
So is there any possibility from what you know of the law that's on the books now that might be applicable to the city to cut down on the...
Have every intention and expectation that we will be using the aspects of the Affordable Care Act to help us reduce our costs.
Yeah, I would think there'd be some opportunities there because that's a big liability for the city.
Absolutely.
Being self-insured and not being able to... I want to get back to the revenue, the income, which is pretty good. And I think you'd have to say that in terms of the business community here, your administration, all, it's done very well for business. You've reduced the B&O. You've done away with manufacturing, the retail. And, of course, the occupation tax went out the window. And the only problem I have with the sales tax, it's a good thing, and you have a good way of collecting it because the state collects it.
Yeah.
Is it's regressive.
I know.
And I don't know how you'd compensate that, but it falls heavily on those.
I understand the theology behind what you're saying.
It's not religious. talk to the pastor over there.
Certainly, philosophically, I understand what you're saying. I think there are some things. For instance, we do have the user fee, which is highly regressive.
Mm-hmm. Is there a tax that isn't regressive?
Income tax is not regressive, and the occupation tax was not regressive.
If I was going to be doing anything that would have a direct effect on people's pocketbooks, I think I would love to be able to get rid of the user fee. Because it's
unfair.
Well, it's absolutely unfair when you have a student at Marshall with a part-time job paying $156 a year in the user fee, and their professor is paying $156. That just is not fair.
Right.
But in the meantime, it is a revenue source that is dependable.
How much does it bring in, roughly?
$4.5 million
a year. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well, the same thing is the sales tax. So people who don't have a lot of income, they go to the store more, they pay. You know, that's part of the problem. Mm-hmm. But on another matter, I believe that Amazon now, which is located in the city.
Yes.
Always has been.
I know, but I'm, you know, when you look at it, it's kind of out there on the hill. People, they now have to begin paying a. What's so funny? I know where Amazon is.
I just love this banter. I just love this.
Maybe we should stop bantering and take a commercial break.
Yeah, Gene wanted to make sure I knew where Amazon was. I know where I pass it every
I think day. I know where you're going, and I think that adds to the collections that we've had because the state is beginning to collect internet sales taxes, and that, I think, also helps.
Yeah, another source of revenue.
Yes. Yes.
Jolly good.
That's the point I was trying to make there.
All right.
We have other income.
All right. Well, we've got to get some income from our commercial sponsors.
Speaking of revenue.
Before Annie falls off his chair laughing in there. There he went. Okay. Listeners, this is Tri-State Talk with Bobby Nelson, Gene Dean, and our guest today, Huntington Mayor Steve Williams. We'd love for you to join in our conversation, and we're at 304-399-8255 here on Supertalk 94.1 FM and AM 930. We will take a couple of minutes now for some commercials, and then we'll be right back with you.
This is Tri-State Viewpoint on Supertalk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
What's your favorite color?
Hey, welcome back to Tri-State Viewpoint. I saw a commercial coming in there. What was that?
What is your favorite color, Bobby?
Red, blue, and white.
Oh, I thought you were going to say green.
Well, I usually... I'm about ready to give up on green after that debacle last Thursday. What a...
You score 49 points, you expect to win a game, don't you?
Well, when you have
right,
more,
Gene?
Oh, of course.
Well, you didn't win, and you had that almost that many run against you on, you know, where was the... It was, I don't know. I was just very upset with it. That was during the whole weekend. And then the Redskins lost. They blew a lead.
Yeah.
And so...
Have you brought us back in?
Yeah, we're here.
Okay, all right.
Mayor and I are just talking about
Jolly good.
I think of a Jolly Green Giant.
Oh boy!
Hey, Mayor, we got a council meeting coming up, right?
Right.
And any big issues?
The one major issue that we're dealing with is the flood wall levy. And interestingly, the only big surprise I had when I came in to office was because of Katrina, every flood wall, every levee in the country has to be certified. And what we found is that we had appropriated about $250,000 for that and found that the actual cost was going to be well over $1 million. And this is, we have one of the larger levees throughout the country. We have 18 miles of levees. And we have levee around Guyandotte and then the Ohio River. Two separate levies. In essence, we did receive assistance from our congressional delegation. Congressman Rahal and Senator Manchin assisted us in working with FEMA to make sure that we could spread out the implementation or the review of the flood wall over three fiscal years.
Because we had still going to be that much money.
Yes. But we're able to spread it out over three fiscal years. And what we did last year, a quarter of $1 million. This fiscal year, we're doing some, and then in July of next year, we'll have a little bit more that we will spend. What these, we have two ordinances, one completing the action on the Guyandotte levee and beginning our contract on the Ohio River levee. What's important about this, obviously, is that if we lose the certification of the flood wall, then everybody's insurance will go up because we'll all be in a floodplain. And it's critically important that we be able to certify this.
Are these minimum safety requirements that you need to meet in terms of the infrastructure and maintenance, or is it ongoing, just each year you got the same?
Well, it's minimum requirements and ongoing maintenance and assuring that our pumps are functional, that the levee itself is free of vegetation, trees and such, making sure that there's not erosion. And so through all of this, it was just I was flabbergasted when, in late December, when I got saw a copy of the letter that here we were with this, that it was going to be over $1 million. What we ended up doing is I did as most of us would do. I asked, have we had a conversation with this engineering firm to see that there's something that they are going to do to help us make this more affordable, rather than just saying this is what the cost is and stepping back. Because all the years that I was in business, if I would say that I'm going to provide a service for a certain cost, and then and I found that that cost actually increased, I would go to my client and say, yes, the cost has increased, and this is here. This is how I'm going to help you get to that point. And we pushed back. They came back and showed us some other ways that we'd be able to spread it out and also talk to FEMA and others. We got the help from our congressional delegation, and as a result, it's something that we haven't been able to reduce the cost, but we've been able to find a way to afford it.
So does FEMA get the money?
Yes. No. FEMA doesn't get the money. We're paying it to an engineering firm who's providing the service to certify that the flood wall is...
It costs them $1 million to certify the safety of the flood.
Yeah, all
you're
over
paying
the
for
nation.
The professional seal.
Yeah, exactly.
Were you when you came into office and you discovered this the amount of money? Was there any negligence that you could find on the part of the engineering firm or any?
Well, that's what I was pushing back on, because I wanted to see. All right, were we being gouged?
Mm-hmm.
So rather than just accepting it, I said, I want a meeting with the engineering firm. And they came in, and that's when I said, when I've been in business, I didn't have somebody just hand me an additional bill and walked away. I would fully expect, if we're going to be a partner, that you're going to show me how I can afford this. Now let me know what some options are. And they came back with the options. When we went up to Washington in the spring and met with their congressional delegation, this was part of what we discussed with our congressional delegation. And just a matter of weeks after that, we received word from FEMA, here is how you can proceed forward.
Okay, I'm not going to mention any names of any engineering firms, but are we still using the firm that we have used for countless years that did a lot of work or does a lot of work for the sanitary board?
No.
Okay.
No.
Are they still here? Are they still in town?
No,
I don't think they are.
No, they're not. Okay. They're not in town. This is a firm
out of state.
This is an out-of-state firm. It's out of Minnesota, and I was asking if we had some local firms that were able to do this. This is their specific specialty.
What about it may be a little far-fetched, but is there any way you could work out some kind of arrangement for some relief and help from the Army Corps of Engineers right here in our town?
Well, the Corps has been active, and I haven't met with the new colonel, but the previous colonel, we had met on several occasions, and I was having some concerns about this. They were very helpful in this. The difference is that because of Katrina, the requirement by FEMA to come in and do this analysis. Now, we've met consistently with the Corps of Engineers about the maintenance of the flood wall and what, long story, I'm starting to get into the weeds on some things, but the detail is that the Corps of Engineers has been very active in their partnership with us to show what we need to do over the next 5 years to make sure that we continue to maintain.
But I would think it might be possible, since they could be like a backup or a support to be here, that might reduce your costs a little bit, having a good professional backup entity that would be there. You wouldn't, unless there's an emergency, just a passing call.
They don't provide support in terms of maintenance of the flood wall, but the fact that they are right
expertise.
Across the street has been
expertise
wonderful.
Branding.
What surprised me with the Corps is that there were some issues I was dealing with, and I needed an answer that day. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to get through. And I called in the morning and asked for the colonel, and I had a meeting in the afternoon.
Mayor, do we have a timetable when they're finally going to finish that renovation over there to make it bulletproof? It's right across the street from me.
I think it's another year away.
Really?
I did meet with the superintendent, and I don't recall specifically when, but it does seem like it translated to me. It was in 2014. It is going to be what I was concerned about among everything that they were doing is I did not want to see that just dog ugly yellow brick back in there. Yeah. I just thought that. And what they are, the design of what they're doing is that the facade is going to complement the stone at the courthouse and the stone of the of City Hall, so it all will blend.
Well, the whole purpose of
this, everybody over there will be stoned, right?
The whole purpose of this is environmental, though, isn't it? You ought to like that.
Yeah, well, it also security.
I wish they had given us $40 million to do other things.
But
I would have accepted that building. Yeah. But the reality is, if they hadn't done that, we probably would have lost the building
and we almost lost the quarry. Remember that battle we went through?
Yes, I did.
But what I haven't seen the schematic of what it's going to look like when it's finished, but that's a very busy intersection. And are they going to have these big round
pillars? Yeah, those bollards are going to continue to be around, but they will not. They will not encroach on 8th Street. We will get our full 8th Street back.
We'll get four lanes back.
Yes.
Thank goodness for that.
Yes.
I know we're almost up to a break, but I want to just ask your opinion, and if you don't want to answer this, but Comcast, cable television, has our franchise. Can they do whatever they like in changing their programs, reducing them, or whatever, without the city having any say in it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, short answer, but that's what I was looking for.
I have to say, though, from what I don't get to see the council meetings as much, but you had indicated, as we all did, that local programming and local TV is horrendous. And
it is. Man. We don't have the new cameras yet, but it will be much better.
One camera, huh?
Yeah.
A little lighting and a little.
And then
I mean, it's like something Mickey Mouse would put together.
Our meetings are a little long now. Just imagine when you can see everybody's face, how long they're going to go.
Well, we're going to find out if the mayor can stay with us a little bit longer, but while we're talking about that, we are going to take a break for news here, and then at least Bobby and I, will definitely be back with you. So give us a call if you'd like to join in our conversation. We are on Supertalk 94.1 FM and AM 930. This is Tri-State Talk. No, it's not. It's Tri-State Viewpoint with Bobby Nelson and Gene Dean and our guest Mayor Steve Williams.
You're listening to Tri-State Viewpoint on Supertalk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
Hey, welcome back to Tri-State Viewpoint. Glad to have you along on this Monday. My co-host will be back any minute. She ran out some copies of an article that we want to talk about a little later. But, you know, this whole Marcellus Shale has been a big deal in West Virginia. And last week, the legislature got a report from some requirements imposed on these gas drilling companies that operate in West Virginia that they're expected to present to the state government the number of employees in this new gas drilling business, and basically their residency, because there were some complaints made that with this Marcellus gas boom, particularly up in the northern part of the state, that there would be an increase in employment, Gene, but that they're finding out that a great deal of these people being employed in this industry may be coming from out of state. And so while there's been about a 20% increase in the industry over the last year, the report that was made to the state Department of Commerce did not include the residency of these employees of these gas companies as required by law.
You're talking about fracking?
Yeah, fracking. Yeah, don't say the wrong word there. Fracking. I always say hi.
I wouldn't do that.
Well, I always say. Well, you said ovaries.
You're going. Well, that's a part of the body.
I try to make sure I don't say the wrong. I say hydraulic first. You got it right. But anyway, you're right. What's happened? There's this allegation being made.
I guess there must be a word I've never heard.
Well, we've been around a long time. There aren't too many we wouldn't have heard, I guess. But let me get back to my point here.
Sorry about your point. Yeah, okay.
It's pointed toward you, Gene. Oh, my goodness. Time out, Ernie. Time out. Anyway, what some of the unions and some of the people who are concerned not only about the environmental damage that this might cause, they say, well, these leases are being bought by out-of-state firms, and they're coming in here and drilling, and they're
promising all these things about jobs and all that, and there's no evidence that the amount of jobs of West Virginians in these sites has increased to any extent, because addresses and locations have been put in this report, which is required by law. And so this is another problem that some people have with this. We're opening the gates wide for this new gas boom, because actually the reserves in this state are tremendous. I mean, you can see it already replacing coal, kind of. But there's also some problems with you generate a lot of water when you do this drilling, because you go down deep, and it's, where does this water go? And they've had some instances where the backwater now is getting on the people's property, and there is an engineer at WVU who says that the buffer zone, which now is only 40 feet, is not between the private property and where the footprint is, needs to be at least 70-75%, because the way water runs and all, and the way they're doing this, that it's getting into could get into the water table. It's also getting into people's property. But in the effort to generate jobs and do something, the state hasn't been all that aggressive in saying, look, we welcome you, we want you here and jobs, but we want you to do it to meet the minimum standards of the state.
Do you like what they're doing, Bobby?
I like the product, and I like the fact that it is an alternative that we're going to need, because coal is slowly, because of not only the cost, but the big wide gaps of coal are just about been mined out.
Mm-hmm.
It is, but if we aren't careful, we're going to get in the same problem with gas that we got in with coal, where we might have
contamination. It looks like we're going down that road already.
Well, that's why this article was in the paper this week, that we need to do this up front. Let's say, come on, guys, now, these reports are due, this information is due. But there's such a political reward in saying we're creating jobs and adding jobs, but there's this tendency to give them the benefit of the doubt,
mm-hmm.
and we have seen what that has caused. Now, in addition to that, there was some bad news that came out over the weekend that Consolidation Coal Company, they are selling their coal mines, five of them, in West Virginia to another coal company, and they are moving to go toward, again, generating plants that use gas. And so, because these coal-fired plants that they supply coal to, and that they have...
They have sold the mines to another company that will work them.
Right. They will continue to work them, at least for the time being, and that is a good sign if they can. But the amount of production is going down, and the amount of workers, because obviously when these big energy companies or electric companies, when they shift to gas and don't use coal, that means it affects coal miners and coal mining. But on the other hand, it helps some of the gas in it, but we don't know how much it's helping in employment, because we don't have the information. And the reason they're selling these coal mines is that there are a number of coal-fired generating plants up in that area that use coal, and they're going to have, with the new carbon restrictions coming on, they're going to have to spend a lot of money to either upgrade or switch to some other food. So they have opted basically to get rid of them, to sell the coal and just, go into. So we're in for a rough period, and already, Gene, we're about $80 million behind in the projected revenue that the state is expected to receive for the next fiscal year. As you know, we'll start next July 1.
Bobby, I wonder, because I hear about West Virginia finances, West Virginia's budget not being in very good shape, and yet it seems to me that just a year ago, we were one of the few states that was doing quite well. Now, what's transpired that has changed the complexion of this?
Well, the energy, we're an energy state, so energy is kind of up and down, but it's fairly steady. But our main source of energy is being affected by the changes that are taking place now in terms of the loss of coal production and the loss of employees, which results in loss of revenues, not only taxes, but people having jobs and all. And so that's beginning to affect the state's revenues.
That Governor Tomlin really has a handle on this?
I think he sees the problem, but I don't think they really have a solution. The problem is that we haven't made any plans for if we have a really drop, something drops out of the bottom, like in an incident. Mm-hmm. All of southern West Virginia is affected by this, and he's from the southern West Virginia, so he certainly knows it. But we're going to go through a rough period, not only in terms of the revenues, but we're just not creating jobs. And that is what we need to get the...
Well, I can understand the difficulty of creating jobs in coal mining, in energy production in general. But on the other hand, shouldn't the governor be looking at other areas where jobs can be created? And if he is, I haven't heard of them.
Well, they're looking, trying to improve exports. That is one of the, you know, we're an export state, primarily coal, because they're still burning it in Europe. And so he just recently turned from a trip from Germany, and, you know, he took a trip there.
Oh,
and we have
trips,
we have
been
overseas.
There.
But, you know, governments and entities, they will put on paper a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan, but
and then they put it on the shelf
and
everybody looks at
it. And you know, we've had this period where coal has been king and we've had good revenues, and coal miners, you know, they make 75 to, in some cases, you know, $85,000
a year. Oh, and then they make good salaries,
and then if they're working one day, the next week they're out and there's nothing, you know, that they can go to produce that kind of income. It starts to spiral, and there is a big story in the, I believe it's in the Washington Post, about the economy in southern West Virginia, and how they used Welch, the county seat of McDowell, which at one time was the biggest coal producing county in the country, and how it now is practically a ghost town. Governor Steve Beshear and the congressman, I believe Johnson, from over in the eastern part of Kentucky, they are having had a press conference early in the morning, and they're doing something to try and help the economy in the coal parts of Kentucky, down in Pikeville and Pike County. They're going down there and meeting with business leaders and community people to see what, you know, what can be done.
I'm impressed with what's going on in Kentucky, in spite of Senator McConnell. I mean, they're doing well with the health plan. They tackled that the right way. Now, here you're telling me about how the governor, Steve Beshear, is trying to revive their economy. And it seems to be that that's what we should be doing here in West Virginia, and I don't see it happening.
Well, it isn't happening because we basically are a coal-based state, where the coal interests kind of have the political...
Well, I know, but so is Eastern Kentucky.
Yes, but you have politicians who aren't as tied. Kentucky is not all coal. It's just mostly the eastern part. West Virginia, we're mostly all coal. And so the political interests are really tuned to big coal and what they want, the Friends of Coal, and you hear what they promote all the time. And so when you try to say, look, you guys need to help out a little more, well, we're going to leave, or we can't do this. Well, they can't take the coal with them, but they have the political clout to elect people, just like Senator or Governor Tomlin. He's from Coal County. He's from Logan, and he isn't going to tip too
much.
He's
not going to rock the boat.
Even though they can see this slipping away, but then when we hit rock bottom, and we'll be there for I don't know how many years before we try to climb back up, but we have all these resources, you know, not just coal, but gas and timber. And there are even people who say we're a good state for solar energy because of the mountains, but the politics won't let that...
There's an old saying that if you put all your eggs in one basket, and that's what we've done for years.
That's exactly right.
And what I want to see is leadership from the governor's office that will look down the road some when the coal and the timber and everything is no longer viable. So...
Well, you will. When you see these coal companies pulling out of the state, then you will see that, you know, out of desperation.
Doom.
Out of desperation, you have to do something. It's just it's really unfortunate that this state is placed in that. And we have good citizens, but the political leadership, they are just basically under the sway of the energy interests, and they control the agenda.
Maybe we need to talk to some delegates or senators. Maybe we can find some leadership coming out of the legislature in West Virginia.
Well, there's two or three, but beyond that, there's 134, but you can probably find maybe 10 that would... it's just unfortunate. It's just the nature of the beast, Gene, you know, the survival of the fittest.
You better get back in it, Bobby.
I've had my sentence.
Oh, let's go ahead and take our commercial break. This is Tri-State Viewpoint. went with Bobby Nelson and Gene Dean. Sorry that the mayor could not stay with us because I had lots more questions for him. But he'll be back with us maybe next week or the week after. So have your questions ready. And if you want to join in our conversation right now, we're at 304-399-8255 or 1-877-420-8255. We'll take a short break and then we'll be right back with you.
Now, back to Tri-State Viewpoint on Supertalk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
Hey, welcome back to the final segment of Tri-State Viewpoint. We've been kind of all over the barnyard here today.
Yeah, I wanted to go all over in another direction even, Bobby, because okay. You told me something, or you showed me an article out of the Charleston Gazette, and it refers to something that Joe Wyatt, one of our regular guests, had brought up several months ago, and it involved this midwife and midwifery in general, mm-hmm. and how they were trying to outlaw it, and just another blow for women's rights in West Virginia. However, that has changed. Mm-hmm. And tell us exactly what it was all about that you learned from the Gazette.
Well, there is a doctor in Charleston. He's with West University School of Medicine, but he's doing this. He's also a strong anti-abortionist, and he's part of a national organization. And he filed a complaint first with the Attorney General of West Virginia, claiming that a woman who was having an abortion and was helped by a midwife through the Women's Health Clinic here in Charleston, that they botched this and that these facilities need to be looked at, and they kind of talked this woman into this, having these services. And basically what they said was that the midwife and the people who were doing this were violating God's law, the laws of West Virginia and everything else, and they filed this complaint. And they should have filed it with the State Nursing Board, but they filed it with the Attorney General, Morrissey, who is sympathetic. He's very much anti-abortion. And you'll recall, Gene, he's the one that sent a letter to the two clinics in West Virginia with the big
law. With all that information he wanted.
Well, he kind of amened this. And so this complaint finally got to the State Nursing Board. They reviewed, interviewed everybody on both sides, including the lady who had the procedure. And what they did over the weekend is totally dismissed the complaint as having no merit whatsoever, that this was, again, a situation where someone was pushing an agenda rather than looking at the facts. And so they not only dismissed the complaint against this midwife and this clinic, they also said in the report that mm-hmm. the lady who had the procedure was very satisfied with the treatment she got, the quality of the people there, and she had no complaints whatsoever. So this was an example where this doctor and the anti-abortionists took one situation and tried mm-hmm. to make it more than it was. And so they got their comeuppance, but I don't know if that's going to stop them. They'll,
Well, and I see it's even been suggested that there should be criminal charges filed against the person who initially charged against the midwife. And I think the fact that the person who was undergoing the procedure was totally satisfied and didn't see any problems, and now the whole thing has been dismissed. Mm-hmm. It's I just don't understand why we've made such big strides forward in health issues in general, and I'm not talking about the Affordable Care Act here, but in women's health. I mean, sometimes in these rural areas, it's so difficult for anyone, but especially women, pregnant women, to get the care that they need. Mm-hmm. And for someone in as high an office as the Attorney General's office to be looking into this and making things even more difficult for women. I know mm-hmm. I sound like a women's libber, which I'm not, but I just believe that women should have the best possible care. We spend more money, I think, than any other nation in the world on our health care, but mm-hmm. we do not, in spite of what people may think, we do not have the best results. Another thing that I don't understand.
Well, these things need to be exposed. That's why I think mm-hmm. it's interesting that we discuss it. And while we're talking about that, I think we ought to give the name of this doctor, because he's the one his name is Dr. Byron Calhoun, mm-hmm. and he is with the West Virginia University School of Medicine out of Charleston.
And he also, though, he's on the national board, the anti-abortion board. He appears as an expert witness against abortions and all. And so he came up with this complaint against this midwife. Her name mm-hmm. is Nixon.
Mm-hmm. Angelita Nixon.
She was a, and she's a certified everything. Mm-hmm. And but they made this big complaint, not at first to the nursing board, but mm-hmm. to the attorney
and
general.
And not from the woman who was undergoing the procedure.
No, never even. Just made this strong allegation. And they basically said that the nursing board, they said they did a thorough investigation and came to the conclusion that Angelita Nixon, provided excellent care, and the same conclusion that they already knew and the one that Dr. Calhoun would have reached if he had consulted with Angie or me, which is, again, the person's about her care. Mm. And it's a situation where someone wants to write the agenda for not only women, but it's certain other issues.
Right.
You might be interested in knowing your thing about the Saudi women driving.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a...
Can I say that word again?
I'll give you the signal when.
Okay.
But what you might be interested in knowing, that there was two Saudi men did a takeoff on that in a song that rhymes that is supportive of it, and it's only been out over the weekend, it's on YouTube, and mm-hmm. it's had over 1 million hits. It's become it's really created a storm of support for women.
And did they talk about the woman's ovaries?
No, they I don't think they used the term, but they rhymed it with a song that I just got a chance to look at part of before I came over. But you might go to YouTube. And Google or type in Arabic women driving or Saudi women driving. It is hilarious. It's really funny. Two guys, they wrote it, and they said, well, at first it was you're just assaulting women on this. And actually, in the end, they're raising not only support for them, but they're asking other countries to donate money to put together a... so there may be a little... and that's probably the most conservative that anyway,
yeah,
it's the Royal
yeah.
Kingdom. But
listeners, in case you missed Friday's show when we had Dr. Mary Beth Bella with us, we brought up the fact that in Saudi Arabia, women are not permitted to drive. And that one cleric in Saudi Arabia, one very important cleric, had said that driving was an injury or injurious to a woman's ovaries. And, of course, there's been a great deal of fun and games around here, the fact that I said that word on the air. Well, I thought it was a perfectly legitimate word. Am I right, Ernie?
It's in the dictionary.
Okay, there you go.
No, what surprised me, I guess, I'm probably... should have said this, but that you would say that because you're prim and proper and very British.
I'm really, really not. Yeah, I would have thought after all those years that we worked together, Bobby, you would know me better than that.
I think that is a compliment that you want
I'm not taking it as an insult, but
I just thought you'd be at least a little, you might have used a different word, but that is great. But before we leave, though, we talked about how West Virginia is kind of under the control of the energy interests, particularly coal.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I have an article here that also was in today's paper. It says four West Virginia coal industry executives who gave hundreds of thousands of dollars to dozens of candidates and committees in the 2000 West Virginia election appear to have exceeded the federal limits on how much they can give. And this is by a considerable
amount. Another scandal.
Well, I mean, it just goes and goes and goes and goes.
Well, listeners, we hope you've enjoyed our conversation today, and it was nice to have Mayor Williams with us. And I want to tell you that for the rest of the week, this program, Tri-State Viewpoint, will be under the sole control of Bobby
Whoa.
Nelson. I won't be here.
When is Halloween?
I'll be back with you next Monday, and in the meantime, keep listening. Bobby's going to need support.
I'm going to have Austin Saunders with me tomorrow to talk about the teen court here in Campbell County.
Okay, that'll be interesting.
And so he's going to join us for the first part of the show.
Okay, tomorrow. All right. Listeners, thanks for being with us today here on Tri-State Viewpoint on Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930. We hope you've enjoyed the show and that you'll be back with us tomorrow. Great evening.
The John Boy and Billy Big Show, morning 6 to 10 on Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930 WRBC Huntington.